From the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers, this is the Taxi Link.
We have been very aware for the last many months now that drivers in DC are very, very keen on organizing and building an organization that would represent their interests. We are already aware that there are organizations like the SBA that have been making very, very serious attempts and is part of the process of attempting to build that kind of power for drivers. And the AFL-CIO's seat as a national organization being in Washington, D.C., we also felt that there's a particular way in which there was additional leverage available in D.C., and therefore we see it as a space where we need to build an affiliate of the national, create a really, really strong mass-based organization that will represent the interests of drivers.
The AFL-CIO's National Taxi Workers Alliance is looking to work with the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers to organize drivers in the nation's capital. We'll speak with two AFL-CIO taxi leaders, Bijou Matthew from New York and Ron Blunt from Philadelphia.
It's simple. We all got to come together. And if it was done in a city like New York, if it was done in a city like Philadelphia, it can damn sure be done in Washington, D.C.
Around 300 drivers gathered Friday in Philadelphia to call on the city to establish a workers' compensation fund for cabbies in the wake of the killing of 33-year-old driver Hafiz Sarafakwas.
By all accounts, 33-year-old Hafiz Sarafakwas was a hardworking man. He died here during a robbery attempt less than a mile from his home. His family says he leaves behind a large extended family that depended on him.
And the DC Taxi Cab Commission approves a credit card mandate as part of the so-called modern taxi meter system, despite objections from drivers and from a taxi cab commissioner, Stanley Tapscott.
It became pretty clear pretty soon.
I could not vote for this simply because I see too many flaws in it that is going to hurt cab drivers. It's going to cost cab drivers more money than they are expecting. And I'd like to know who may put these figures out or how much cab drivers are going to make.
Lastly, we turn to John List, founder of Tenants and Workers United, a grassroots organization working with drivers in Alexandria and Arlington.
And it became pretty clear pretty soon that the drivers were having a problem because they were attached to a monopoly like property.
This is the Taxi Link, brought to you by the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers. I'm Pete Tucker with thefightback.org. Chanting "Drivers Power, Drivers Power," around 300 cabbies gathered near West Philadelphia's historic 30th Street station to call on the city to take steps to improve driver safety as well as to establish a workers' compensation fund for cabbies. The protest came on the heels of the killing of 33-year-old driver Hafiz Sarafakwas. Here's part of a news report from ABC6.
33-year-old Hafiz Sarafakwas was a hardworking man. He died here during a robbery attempt less than a mile from his home. His family says he leaves behind a large extended family that depended on him.
He basically helped everybody. Anybody needs his help, he's there. I mean, no matter what.
Family and friends gathered at the home in Upper Darby Hafiz shared with his wife and 7-year-old daughter. Police believe he picked up a fare at 33rd and Walnut last night. When he dropped him off at 62nd, police say the man pulled a gun and tried to rob the cabbie. Hafiz stepped on the gas and the robber opened fire. The cab crashed into a vacant house. Hafiz died later at the hospital.
5 minutes before, like my older brother was talking to him on a phone. And 5 minutes later, we find out he's no more. And I don't know what to say.
Hafiz became a U.S. citizen after arriving here from Pakistan 13 years ago. His family says he worked 12 hours a day, 7 days a week to provide for his family. Just recently, he told his cousin they should start taking Sundays off to spend more time with their kids together. Many of Hafiz's relatives are also cab drivers. They say they constantly worry about each other's safety. This cabbie showed me the panic button that's been installed on all cabs, but he got no response when he pressed it.
You hit the button, but nobody's responding?
No, nobody's responding. Let me talk to the supervisor and see. 1034.
The dispatcher responded briefly, but after repeated attempts by the driver, never indicated whether the button was working or not.
It doesn't make you feel very safe, I guess.
Yeah, no.
That was a news report from ABC 6 of Philadelphia. Friday, around 300 cabbies gathered near Philadelphia's historic 30th Street train station to call on the city to take steps to improve driver safety as well as to establish a workers' compensation fund. Here's one of the speakers at yesterday's protest.
We are strong here because we are all together here. And that's how this country is. Like, you know, all the immigrants are doing their odd jobs. They're making everybody's life easier. And now what I want to tell you, like all of you saw, the PPA inspectors, they are now wearing the bulletproof vest. What is that for? For their safety. And behind that, they have all the benefits that we don't have it. So now this is the time. We want, like instead of 5% taking our from our credit card transactions, they need to put at least 1% for the people that who are getting killed in the line of their duty.
That was a Philadelphia driver speaking at Friday's protest. On Wednesday, the D.C. Taxi Cab Commission voted to approve a credit card mandate as part of the so-called modern taxi meter system. A press release from the commission says the rulemaking is expected to take effect May 31st, installation is projected to begin June 1st, and all cabs should be equipped with credit card readers by August 31st. The cost of the modern taxi meter system will be offset by several factors, but mainly by a 25-cent surcharge on each ride and a 25-cent increase to the base fare, which would raise to $3.25. That's according to the commission, which also claims that drivers will see a 2-4% increase in their earnings from the dais directly before the vote. Longtime driver and D.C. Taxi Cab Commission member Stanley Tapscott questioned taxi chair Ron Litton about his claims that drivers will earn more money with the modern taxi meter system.
Chairman, I understand your mandate and the mandate of this committee, but there's some things that has, as a driver, has disturbed me quite a bit. In 2006, when we was put in the meter system, we lost 30 cents for each ride we made. And over 5 or 6 years, we lost a lot of money. Now, I don't know where these figures are coming from that we're going to make more money. Maybe we do, but I have not seen any figures to that statement. And I'm really concerned of the overall picture of how much it's going to cost the cab drivers. This, the painting, and the dome light. I'd like to know how much this is going to boil down to cost a cab driver to be in business in D.C. Thank you.
That was D.C. Taxi Cab Commission member Stanley Tapscott questioning taxi chair Ron Linton's claims that drivers will earn 2-4% more with the modern taxi meter system. Linton ignored Tapscott's question and moved directly to a vote without providing a response. Directly after the hearing, Commissioner Tapscott discussed his sole vote in opposition to the modern taxi meter system, and he also questioned the presence of a commissioner who hadn't shown up in months, yet cast a vote anyway.
There's people, you know, that's voting that I really wonder whether they have a voice in this because they never show up in meetings. Most of the people don't even know they're still on the council. So I'm just wondering, what is it? What's going to be the outcome of all these things? I could not vote for this simply because I see too many flaws in it that is going to hurt cab drivers. It's going to cost cab drivers more money than they are expecting. And I'd like to know who may have put these figures out or how much cab drivers are going to make. Where'd they get these figures? I've never seen any survey or anything done. And I think these figures are just being picked out of the air. And some of the things in it, I might would vote for it, but there's so many things in it, I just could not vote for it, and I will not vote for it.
Chairman Litton said driver income should increase 2-4% with this modern taxi system. You asked for information. He didn't respond to your request, but then just proceeded with the vote.
Well, I guess he didn't want to reveal where it came from, because I don't know of any study he made. Where he's picking these figures out, I do not know where they're coming from. Where he's getting his information, I have not seen anything. So are these just figures that they're picking out of the air to get people excited that they're going to make more money and the people that's on the dais going to vote for it? I cannot vote for it.
Now, Ralph Burns showed up. He's a commissioner. Well, I guess he's a commissioner, but it's been months and months and months since he showed up. And he just appeared today and voted in favor of it. your comment on that. This is a fellow commissioner, but I did not know he was still on the commission.
Well, he shows up very sparingly. He shows up. He did show up today for the vote. I was surprised that he was here today, but he's generally not at any meetings. Even our executive mission, I think he's been maybe once or twice. But I don't know whether there should be, to me, some type of way that force the commissioners to assemble for these kind of things every time you have a meeting, not when they feel like it or when they feel like they want to vote.
Any final thoughts you care to share?
I got so many thoughts. We'd be standing here all day, but I still go back to the same thing that I said on air the other day. Drivers, drivers, they will not come out. You see, we have here today maybe 20 or 25 drivers out of 7,000. So they look down there and they know what's going to go on. They've got nobody standing up. Well, we got some people standing up for the drivers, but not being heard. And if the drivers don't stand up for themselves, they're responsible for what's happening to them.
That was D.C. Taxicab Commission member Stanley Tapscott. We spoke outside One Judiciary Square at 441 4th Street Northwest after this week's meeting of the D.C. Taxicab Commission. Testifying before the commission on Wednesday was Michelle Chame, a board member of the Small Business Association of D.C. Taxicab Drivers, and he asked how any meaningful feedback could be given when the commission doesn't post the proposed rulemakings till hours before the hearing.
Regarding the final rulemaking of Chapter 4, 6, and 8, I was watching when the document would be published until 4 p.m. yesterday. Nothing happened, but it was posted after 4 p.m. How do you expect us to evaluate, analyze this, and to decide what has a significant effect on our daily activity and daily business? And we are supposed to come and testify or provide our input 10 o'clock today. I'm sorry, this is a repeated complaint we have. Regardless, I have my written comments on the proposed rulemakings, and I represent the Small Business Association of the District of Columbia Taxicab Drivers. I would be willing to submit this written statement if you have the eyes and the ears to hear and listen.
That was Michelle Chame, a board member of the Small Business Association of D.C. Taxicab Drivers, testifying before the commission on Wednesday. Here's some of what Taxi Chair Ron Litton had to say just before the vote on the credit card mandate in the so-called modern taximeter system.
The D.C. taxicab operators are concerned about the cost associated with conversion to a non-cash payment system. Passengers are increasingly expecting non-cash payment options to be available in the public vehicles for hire. There is a lack of verifiable research data re-taxi operations in D.C. Digital dispatch providers are reluctant to establish relationships with payment service providers in order to service taxi drivers and are likely to become PSPs. Redistribution of the 50-cent passenger surcharge into $1 additional passenger charge would alleviate the financial concerns of taxi operators. Additional passenger charge would apply to an average of 21% of all taxi rides. Implementing MTS must take into account the needs of disabled passengers to ensure access to the non-cash payment system. Technology is rapidly evolving, and DCTC must prepare to deal with the impact on the taxi industry. Marketplace competition can provide taxi operators with options that may result in lower costs for equipment, installation, and transaction fees. Taxi driver income is projected to increase with the MTS.
Those were some of D.C. Taxi Chair Ron Linton's comments directly before Wednesday's vote on the modern taximeter system, which includes a mandate for credit card acceptance. We'll play more of Linton's comments and hold a discussion on Wednesday's vote later in the program. Tuesday, the D.C. Council took the first of two votes needed to approve Gladys Mack as the newest member of the D.C. Taxicab Commission. In presenting Ms. Mack's nomination to the full council, Ward 3 Councilmember Mary Che, who chairs the Committee on Transportation and the Environment, had this to say.
Is a former assistant city administrator for budget, served as director of policy and program evaluation in the executive office of the mayor, served as chair and CEO of the district board of parole, worked as a deputy director and COO of a nonprofit organization, and served on the WMATA Board of Directors for 23 years. Ms. Mack is an experienced leader in government with knowledge of not only district operations and fiscal policy, but also significant transportation policy. Ms. Mack has the experience in rate setting as well as other concerns of the public, such as pollution, air quality, technology, and innovation that will serve her well as she serves on the commission. We are very pleased that someone of her broad experience and background has come forward to serve as a member of the Taxi Cab Commission.
Those were some of Councilmember Mary Che's remarks on Tuesday before the full D.C. Council regarding Gladys Mack's nomination to the Taxi Cab Commission. In the first of two votes, the D.C. Council unanimously approved Ms. Mack's nomination. Last month, at her nomination hearing before the D.C. Council's Committee on Transportation and the Environment, Gladys Mack said, "I think you will find me to be quite open to any concerns of the independent operators."
"I think you will find me to be quite open to any concerns of the independent operators. When I was at Metro, I was considered to be quite a friend of the Metro bus operators because Metro bus is so important to the district. And basically, I believe in equity and fairness and seek to achieve that in any activity that I'm involved in."
That was Gladys Mack, the newest nominee to the D.C. Taxi Cab Commission, speaking before the D.C. Council's Committee on Transportation and the Environment last month. At Tuesday's D.C. Council legislative meeting, Ward 6 Councilmember Tommy Wells praised Gladys Mack's nomination, but said the D.C. Taxi Cab Commission is obsolete and needs to be abolished.
"But what I will say, and I said this in committee, is that while I think that we are a better city and a better run to have Gladys Mack serve on the Taxi Cab Commission, I believe the Taxi Cab Commission is obsolete. I think it's an antiquated way for government to work. I think that the Taxi Cab Commission really has outlived its usefulness. And I I think that with heroic efforts of great board members, I think they can bring it, you know, to work. And I know that Gladys Mack is one of the least tempted, corruptible people you'll ever meet in the city. But Taxi Cab Commissions have a poor track record. And I think it's time that we modernize our government, and that we move beyond the commission. But for while we have it, I'm glad Gladys Mack will serve on it. But I just want to go on record that I think it's time to abolish the Taxi Cab Commission."
That was Ward 6 Councilmember Tommy Wells. Wednesday afternoon at the offices of the AFL-CIO, I sat down with Biju Mathew, co-founder and secretary of the National Taxi Workers Alliance. The alliance has affiliates in New York, Philadelphia, and most recently Austin, Texas, and it's developing relationships with drivers in a number of other cities, including possibly right here in D.C. I began by asking Biju Mathew to describe the National Taxi Workers Alliance, as well as the organization which gave birth to it, the New York Taxi Workers Alliance.
The New York Taxi Workers Alliance started 16 years ago. The National Taxi Workers Alliance came into being in October 2011, just about a little more than a year and a half ago. And it came into place as the 57th Chartered Union of the AFL-CIO, a particular kind of recognition that workers in the United States are more and more not fitting into the employee-employer category and are organized or are structured into the economy in all sorts of different ways, including, as in the case of taxi drivers, as independent contractors. I mean, taxi drivers know it, that they are workers, that they labor 12-hour, 10-hour, 14-hour shifts, that they barely make enough money in spite of working 10, 12, 14 hours a day. And so, you know, if you are a worker in terms of what happens to you in your daily experience of living, then I think the worker, the driver, recognizes that. But for the longest time, all sorts of structures in the U.S. wouldn't recognize that. And I think the coming into place of the National Taxi Workers Alliance is a testimony to the fact that those workers who were being left out, were not part of the movement, are now part of the movement. And the world has opened up in that sense for them.
Talk about some of the cities you've seen affiliate, I think, most recently in Austin.
That's right. So the founding affiliates of the National Taxi Workers Alliance is Philadelphia. Ron's the president of the Taxi Workers Alliance of Philadelphia and New York, the New York Taxi Workers Alliance. And so We've been working in several cities since then. As a matter of fact, our work with other cities goes back to even before before the actual official charter. In 2007, we had a taxi drivers convention in New York, which we pulled off on a shoestring budget. Mm. Drivers from 24 cities came into New York, hung out, talked for 3 days, and then went away. Mm. And we didn't get much out of it in terms of actual organizational formation, but we clearly initiated a set of conversations which have come in very useful after the National has been formed. So we are talking, so the National has three categories under which it works. The first is the affiliate, the full affiliate, which is what Austin now has become as of the 30th of April. Austin is the third affiliate of the National Taxi Workers Alliance. Then is a second category, which we call organizing committee, which is cities where drivers have already begun to organize, have created either an organizational form for themselves or a quasi-organizational form, which we then help bring into a greater degree of formation, and where an official leadership body has come into place, when we seek off the official leadership body ratification or a vote saying that they want to, at some point in the future, become an affiliate of the National. And we set the time clock on that. And so we'll invest a lot more resources in terms of, you know, just doing sheer work in terms of trying to put organizers on the ground, putting campaign support in place, etc. So that's the organizing committee. And then the third is the organizing drive, wherein we establish contact and, you know, provide a certain amount of minimal support and get into conversations about moving it to an organizing committee status. So these are the three kind of, formal structures that we have in the National in terms of working with drivers from other cities. At this point, we're working Houston and Chicago. Are the two cities that are in the organizing committee status. That is wherein there's a formal agreement with the organization that they want to be part of the National by December 31st, 2013. And then there are a whole bunch of cities that are in the organizing drive status. Everybody from San Jose to San Francisco to, you know, Dallas to San Antonio to D.C. in that sense, and as much as we are expressing interest and we are in conversation with something like the SBA, etc., you know, so that's how we see that situation.
I know you're busy just listening to all the cities where you're talking to folks. Lastly, what brings you to D.C.?
Well, D.C., we have been very aware for the last many months now that drivers in D.C. are very, very keen on organizing and building an organization that would represent their interests. We are already aware that there are organizations like the SBA that have been making very, very serious attempts and is part of the process of attempting to build that kind of power for drivers. And the AFL-CIO's seat as a national organization being in Washington, D.C., we also felt that there's a particular way in which there was additional leverage available in D.C., and therefore we see it as a space where we need to build an affiliate of the National, create a really, really strong mass-based organization that will represent the interests of drivers. It's the fourth largest taxi market in the United States. So it's as simple as that at some level. Chicago is the second largest after New York, and then it's, I think, L.A. and then D.C. Mm-hmm. So
that was B.G. Matthew, co-founder and secretary of the National Taxi Workers Alliance, the 57th National Union of the AFL-CIO. We spoke on Wednesday. Also with the D.C. offices of the AFL-CIO, I caught up with Philadelphia taxi leader Ron Blount, Vice President of the National Taxi Workers Alliance. I began by asking Blount about his organizing with drivers in Philly.
We started organizing in 2005. The motive being 5 drivers was killed in a 12-month period. Taxi drivers in the city hadn't had a meter increase in 14 years. So there's a group of us, that maybe 10 or 15 of us, that we started thinking, like, what if we just stopped working? What if we just all came together for like 1 hour? So we had a strike at the train station. It wasn't really a strike, but a 2-hour targeted strike. And then at the end of the strike, we got a call from Harrisburg and said, would we be happy if they raised the meter by 30 cents? So that was like the beginning, like if we work together, things could change. And so that was the birth of the Taxi Workers Alliance in Philadelphia.
And then as recently as last night, you lost the driver. What are some of the issues you tackle?
Right, so when the taxi regulators took over regulating Philadelphia cabs in 2005, the Philadelphia Parking Authority, they came with 246 pages of regulation, changing the mileage of the cab, changing the age of the cab, raising the fines to $5,000. I mean, the fines were the highest in the nation. All these things, and the drivers had no input in it. So it took a series of protests, strikes. We even filed lawsuits, but it was a combination of all of these different strategies that broke it. So finally, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled that those regulations was invalid and unenforceable. So they was forced to do new rules and regulations line by line where the drivers were at the table. So that was probably one of our biggest victories. We was able to get the fines lowered. So the average fine on drivers today is about $100 compared to like $1,000 to $5,000 when they first came in. We were able to raise the meter three times and also push for two fuel surcharges. One is still in effect today. And we was able to force them to sit down and talk to us about any issue, any wheelchair accessible cabs, anything that they want to implement. They first call us and see what is our opinion of it. You know, sometimes they agree with us, sometimes they don't, but they do call us. And lastly, I think one of the things that drivers were able to achieve was, like, when one of our members, like, get in trouble, get a ticket for a ball tire or something, we're able to call down into the parking authority and negotiate either to lower the fine or either get the fine thrown out altogether. So all that came together because the drivers just stuck together. Now, I'm not saying we had 100%, but on major issues, like when we call for an action, we get like 98% participation. Mm. But as far as membership, I would say at least about 20, 25% of the full-time drivers in Philadelphia are members of the TWA union. Mm. Yeah.
What's the level of respect the general public has had and the officials have had for drivers over the course of your organization's history?
It has been a big change. I mean, we still get some issues, like with the district attorney and stuff, but mainly with city council, state representatives, U.S. congressmen, they have a lot of respect for us. Now, when we call for a meeting with them, it's like, who are these guys? It's like they call us back, what day is good for you and stuff like that. I think the public has more respect for the drivers since we started organizing. You know, they don't see cab drivers as the thieving foreigners that are coming here to take their jobs. I mean, that because we work on other issues. Like, we work on the school issues. When the taxi regulator was supposed to give part of their budget to the public school system, we was there on those protests. When our hotel workers was trying to form their unions, we was there on their struggle. When the security guards were forming, the Philadelphia Security Officers Union, we was there at their birth. We lobbied. We helped them during their election. So we get involved with a whole mass of struggles of poor and working people. And they see taxi drivers in a new light.
You're a driver yourself?
Right. I started driving in 1983, but since 2006, I've been a full-time organizer with TWA.
You have any message for DC drivers?
Right. It's very simple. Either we all got to come together. Don't matter what nationality, what race. None of that stuff matters. The matter is, like, how are we being treated as human beings? So we all got to come together, and we got to see this as our struggle. It's not just Ethiopian struggle or Arab struggle. It's all of our struggle. So we all got to come together. We all got to put leaders on a board to form decisions. So, you know, everybody has representation in this struggle, you know. So it's simple. We all got to come together. And if it was done in a city like New York, if it was done in a city like Philadelphia, it can damn sure be done in Washington, D.C.
That was Philly Taxi Leader and National Taxi Workers Alliance Vice President Ron Blount. We spoke Wednesday at the AFL-CIO. This is The Taxi Link, brought to you by the Small Business Association of D.C. Taxi Cab Drivers. I'm Pete Tucker with thefightback.org, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tony Norman, chairman of D.C. Advisory Neighborhood Commission 1B, which includes parts of U Street, 9th Street, and Georgia Avenue. Welcome, Tony Norman.
Glad to be here.
Well, I want to begin by getting your comments on the modern taxi meter system that has passed and will now go into effect, although we have seen a similar thing passed not too long ago with smart meters, a Verifone contract that ended up being overturned in court. But I wanted to get your comment on this credit card mandate, and then it's going to come with later on screens in the back of every cab. And also Linton's putting out there that it's going to lead to a 2 to 4% increase in driver income. But as you heard, Taxicab Commission member Stanley Tapps got asked from the dais. He wanted the data to back that up and just move straight to a vote, didn't even bother to answer his fellow commissioner's question. But I welcome Tony Norman.
Yeah, I just want to say in terms of the the drivers were already phasing in credit cards options even before this movement that Linton claimed that they were going to do to reform the Taxicab Commission. And also, I think it shows if you listen to the clip when the commissioner was asking a question about the drivers are not necessarily going to be getting a rate increase or how they're going to, where those numbers are coming from. You notice that Linton ignored him and just moved quite along with it. And then you had one commissioner who came out of the blue who hasn't been to a commission meeting and who knows when and just voted for what was there. It shows you that there was already an agenda to pass that through, and they had no concern about what some of the taxicab mission commissioners raised a question about, particularly Tapscott, who was raising issues. He's a industry representative. He represents the taxicab drivers. You would think that he would want to explain to that representative of taxicab drivers how they're going to get that increase and where his numbers are coming from. I mean, basically what's going on here is that Linton and this commission took away the driver's right to make money when they changed, first of all, when they changed over from the to the meter, and then when he instituted these so-called increases, he actually took away the passengers, the driver's surcharge ability to charge additional passengers. And then now he's giving back a dollar no matter what, how many passengers get into the cab. So there's still a loss for the driver. So you take away $100, and then I give you back $50, and then I want you to thank me for giving you back the $50 when I took away $100 from you. And that's exactly what's going on here. It's not good for the taxicab drivers, and it's not good for the commission of the city. I mean, Tapscott was right on point, and it obviously that the fix was in that they were going to roll this through and go through with the votes.
Yeah, because just to go to the point that you made, that Chairman Ron Linton is saying, okay, well, this is going to lead to a 2 to 4% increase in what drivers will make, although Stanley Tapscott asked for data and Linton did not provide it on the dais. And one of the, if you look at his explanation for where that money is coming from, 25 cents from a surcharge and 25 cents from an increase to the base fare. But then he also says, oh, yeah, we're going to have an additional passenger surcharge, which was always the case until Linton came in. He removed it. And now, as you're saying, he's only putting back a little bit of it. So now you could still have a car full of passengers, which I think is what the hospitality industry wanted, is you can pack the cabs full of passengers and only have to charge nothing. It used to be that you charge for each passenger. And now he's saying if you have four passengers, you still only charge $1, not $1 each, just $1. And he took it away. And now when he puts it back in conjunction with the smart meter system, now he's saying, oh, look, it's going to increase driver revenue. It does seem a bit disingenuous. You almost got to put on your funny hat to deal with the logic, such as it is, of the Taxicab Commission.
Yes, that's the game that they play, that they take away, like I said, they take away from you, then they give back what they took away, although they don't give totally back what they took away from you. But that's why Linton is right. The taxicab drivers have to be on top of these sort of things. That's why it's important that these union discussions are taking
place. Linton was right, or Tapscott?
I'm sorry, Tapscott.
Commissioner
was
Stanley
right.
Tapscott, the
that's
longtime
right.
driver.
Tapscott was right. But that's why the taxicab drivers need to be on top of this in terms of the union organizing. That's very important. They really need to follow through on that with the in this region as well as nationally, particularly when you look at the problems that are taking place with the taxicab drivers in Virginia and Maryland. And it's time that the taxicab drivers start fighting for their rights on a more unified level.
And I want to mention drivers in Virginia, and particularly in Alexandria, this coming Tuesday, they face a vote on credit card, mandating credit card acceptance. And drivers are concerned not with the mandate so much as with the ability to choose their own vendor and not have to just be forced into contracting with one. So that's coming up this Tuesday, and Tenants and Workers United have been very involved with the Alexandria drivers. And I also wanted to take a moment to pause for a sec to let drivers know. I mean, Tony, you were pointing out, as Stanley Tapscott did, the importance of organizing. And it is, you're seeing now the AFL-CIO, the National Taxi Workers Alliance, in conversation with the Small Business Association of DC Taxi Cab Drivers as they look to, you know, they're organizing all over the country, including here in DC. And like with this radio show, the Small Business Association also directly following the radio show beginning at 8:30 p.m., they have a weekly phone conference for drivers who speak Amharic, not English, but the phone conference takes place in Amharic, and it begins at 8:30, and I'll give the number out for that twice. The number is 712-432-3100, and the code that you enter once you call that number is 140465, and I'll do that one more time. Again, this is a very important piece of information. You know, it's critical that the conversation continue, that drivers know what's going on. That's the point of this radio show and the phone conference as well. And that, again, the number is 712-432-3100, and the code is 140465. Tony Norman, we're going to, in a moment, go back to more of an extended clip of Chairman Linton's what he said before the vote on the modern taxi meter system. But first, I wanted to get your response. This is an issue that we dealt with a number of times some months ago, maybe a year plus ago, and that's the elimination of the Taxi Cab Commission. This time it was presented by Ward 6 Councilmember Tommy Wells. He said, yes, he's in favor of Gladys Mack, who has a long established career. And as she pointed out, she's not going to be antithetical to drivers. Too oftentimes we get commissioners who really just represent the hospitality industry, and they don't really have a concern for drivers. Although the last couple commissioners, from Cyril Crocker to Gladys Mack, seem to be more professional and really take serious all perspectives. But can you comment on this? It's now raising its head again, that eliminating the Taxi Cab Commission. I mean, in one sense, it's certainly a problematic agency, but what would that mean for drivers? And drivers, I should say, the Small Business Association opposes that.
I think it would just mean a tragedy. I mean, the situation is, it's not just because you're having problems doesn't mean that you eliminate the agency. You should reform and correct the problems with the agency. I mean, I think one of the recommendations was to turn all of this authority over to the D.C. Department of Transportation. And that's a horrible situation, a horrible option. And I think that's what the direction Tommy was. And at one point, Mary Che was trying to go in, because if you do that, then now it becomes a complete bureaucracy that handles the Taxi Cab Commission. And then now you have total control by the bureaucrats as to what will be charged, how it will be regulated. And I think you will lose control, and drivers will lose control, and the consumer will lose input. Taxicab industry is an industry in and of itself. It's a very important industry. And I think to eliminate the Taxicab Commission is to eliminate the importance of what the taxicab industry is all about, and the drivers and the passengers. I mean, it's a regulation. It's really an entity in the universe unto itself. So the problem is, you don't eliminate the commission itself. You make reforms to make improvements in the industry. And I think that that's a very, very dangerous and a very bad direction to go in that direction.
That's the voice of Tony Norman, an ANC commissioner in D.C. and co-host of The Taxi Link, which airs right here on WUST, 1120 a.m., and is archived. All the Taxi Link shows you can find at thefightback.org. thefightback.org, and tell drivers, let drivers know. You can listen, you got your headset, you can listen on your smartphone and listen at home, but it's important that drivers hear, you know, the clips from whether it be the protest in Philadelphia to the AFL-CIO organizers with the National Taxi Workers Alliance to the taxi chair Ron Linton, that people hear directly from the source and get a sense of what exactly is taking place in the industry. I wanted to turn now to back to Wednesday's DC Taxi Cab Commission hearing and vote on the modern taxi meter system and credit card mandate. Here's a more extended clip of what Taxi Chair Ron Linton had to say about the rulemaking.
The average annual cost for MTS is projected to be approximately $970 per vehicle. Of this amount, it is estimated that transaction fees will be approximately $460 per annum. This calculation is based on an expectation of an average transaction fee of 3.5%, with 30% of all fares being non-cash payments. Other cities, including New York, Boston, Philadelphia, that have cashless payment systems in place have usage in the range of 40% of fares after several years of growth. The MTS cost for equipment, installation, maintenance, and fees should be offset by the increased revenue that is expected to be generated. The source of this increased income is produced in several ways, increasing the flag drop rate, implementing the additional passenger charge, and sharing advertising revenue. Our reviews of the payment service providers via MTS indicate that the total cost to a driver cab will be approximately $150 to install, plus $35, $275 per month, including credit card transaction fees, maintenance, and wireless data plan. The Commission reviewed rate charges to ensure that the pledge to drivers that they would not have to assume the costs to transition to a cashless system would be kept. The Commission also vowed that passengers would not have to pay any additional costs beyond the expected passenger surcharge. To this end, the Commission plans to eliminate extra charges except the snow emergency fee and the telephone dispatch fee. Thus, in the judgment of the Commission, the income of drivers would increase by 2 to 4% over the cost associated with the MTS. When the MTS was conceived, and as the proposed rules evolved with a public comment period, there were many technical considerations. A few are summarized. An important consideration was safeguarding driver and consumer privacy. To accomplish this, the Commission decided not to track vehicles in real time unless there was an explicit need related to law enforcement. Additionally, the Commission will aggregate only anonymous electronic trip data from payment service providers for research purposes. In fact, the drop-off location of passengers is limited to broad geographical areas defined by census tract. Furthermore, the technology deployed in cabs must meet security guidelines of the Open Web Application Security Project and comply with the current standards of the payment card industry. The Commission recognized that mobile technologies were not only becoming more sophisticated, but also the cost of implementation was declining. Thus, the Commission allows any reasonable combination of fixed or mobile devices, wired or wireless, open or closed architecture, to serve as components of the MTS, and at the same time prohibit the manual entry of fare information into an application. Digital reservation and payment systems have crucial roles in the taxi industry. The selection of PSPs does not place any limits on the ability of taxi operators to choose more than one digital reservation service provider. The MTS operates similar to an ecosystem where balance must be maintained for the survival of all of its inhabitants. MTS is comprised of a digital reservation systems, taxi meters, smartphone apps, credit card systems, payment service providers, mobile data terminals, driver monitors, and passenger information display devices. Each component has a specific purpose designed to ensure fairness and open competition, to meet minimum technological standards, and to preserve the freedom of choice by taxi operators and company. Any attempt to undermine this framework will create chaos, resulting in potentially significant financial losses to payment service providers and make it virtually impossible for the Commission to aggregate data for policy making. A misconception about the MTS technology and or the proposed policy is that smartphone apps or digital reservation companies cannot coexist with the MTS. However, a precedent has been set in New York City that indicates the technology compatibility, and the proposed rulemaking provides a framework for coexistence by requiring digital payments to be integrated with the MTS. Thus, the digital reservation company has the freedom to integrate with one or all PSPs. With the existing application and database technologies available in the marketplace today, a digital reservation company can receive fare and trip data from the MTS without the need for additional hardware. The PSP will be provided with the payment method on file to allow the PSP to process the transaction and submit to the Commission an accurate electronic data sheet. The Commission received a recommendation to treat digital payments as cash, but this approach would compromise the quality of research data for rate studies, industry service profiles, and driver's income. As an example, a fare of $10 would net the driver anywhere from $9.40 to $9.65, depending on the transaction fee, possible digital reservation fee assessed to the driver, type of credit or debit card used, and other variables. So if this $10 transaction is recorded as cash and a driver makes 20 such trips a day, the data would create the incorrect impression that the driver actually made $200 in cash. Furthermore, as the frequency and types of payment are studied, cash, credit, digital, other, the Commission will be in a better position to enact appropriately targeted policies for innovation and customer convenience. Another critical consideration was making MTS accessible to persons with disabilities. Rather than mandate a single approach to provide the appropriate service capabilities, the Commission provided the flexibility for PSPs to work with disability advocates to customize their systems with mechanisms included but not limited to audio prompting, braille, and input control with tactile feedback. Finally, it should be noted that the aforementioned technical considerations are a start but not the end. As the technology evolves, the Commission will periodically take a close look at current requirements and contemporary ways of achieving goals.
That was DC Taxi Chair Ron Linton from Wednesday's hearing of the DC Taxi Cab Commission. This is the Taxi Link, broadcast on WST 1120 AM. I'm Pete Tucker with my co-host, Tony Norman. And Tony, can you comment on, we just played an extended clip of Ron Linton's comments before the vote on the modern taxi meter system, but I also just wanted to remind drivers what they already know, which is that this is the second go-around of the smart meters. The first one got overturned in court when a judge looked at it and just saw that the procurement process was deeply flawed, and it was rushed. And it's not clear. It's not clear that this has been, you know, perfectly thought through. In fact, we played a clip on a previous week that Linton said he really emphasizes, you know, you can't know everything all the time. So, you know, you kind of act now and then you work it out as you go along. That's a mindset and the principle that has gotten a taxi cab commission in trouble previously. But your response to Linton's testimony and to what we're seeing here.
Well, like you said, once again, this is we went through this once before. It's simply trying to achieve the same thing that the court really abolished, these monopolies and how the smart system. And he's trying to go through the back door and trying to institute it. I mean, once again, I think the taxi cab drivers can see through what's going on. If you listen carefully to his testimony, you will see exactly what he's trying to do in terms of the back door and what's going on with the commission itself. But the important thing here is for the drivers, once again, I think that the drivers need to be organized in terms of the union, in terms of themselves. I mean, if they're divided, they can't really. And there's different taxi cab groups to fight these things. So if they're unified in one unified, I guess, union, if you will, for the region and have the backing of a national organization. And this gets back to the, like they're trying to do in Philadelphia, the workers' compensation. Drivers shouldn't just collect their money. Some of the money that this 25 cents that Linton is talking about that the commission would get ought to go into a fund for drivers in case they're injured, disabled, or even for somewhat of looking at some sort of retirement benefit. So some of those funds should go into some sort of not just workers' compensation, but something else for the drivers, like that driver that was, you work for all these years and you're injured. What if you can't drive or something? Not, you're just knocked out of an income. So I think that's something that needs to be put in now or looked into legislation to do that.
Now, DC Taxi Chair Ron Linton's answer is to have a safety button or a panic button in the cabs. And we saw that apparently it doesn't work so good in Philadelphia.
Yes, we saw what happens with the panic button. You just—it's more psychological. That's part of the problem. You can't just come up with psychological solution to public safety issues. You know, if we're already stretched with police resources and the taxicab hackers, how is it a button is going to solve all of that? So you can press a button, but what's going to happen on if no one comes within 5 or 10 minutes? So I think, once again, it highlights psychological solutions rather than practical solutions to what the drivers are really enduring, like this person last week who did the sting operations, trying to say that drivers are racist, which is not necessarily the case. Sometimes there's a valid perspective on the part of drivers to be cautious as to what neighborhoods that they drive in and what particular passengers they're going to pick up. That's not necessarily racial discrimination. That's just concern. And there ought to be some measures that will protect the driver other than a psychological panic button.
You're speaking of Russ Potosik, who's a Channel 9 reporter, and he is kind of the lead of – it seems to be a favorite of reporter to go after drivers, but he's certainly the most aggressive. And yet you don't see police following up. So a driver gets robbed. We heard Commissioner Tapscott on last week's show, and he said it's so bad that a lot of drivers don't even call the police because now in addition to getting robbed, and that happens too frequently – then you're going to lose, you're going to be robbed of your time waiting for the police, and they're really not going to, it's not going to be, a lot of times it's not going to be a serious investigation. And it's interesting because you have these taxi cabs that are now, looks like, going to be painted red, like the circulator buses, that you constantly hear they're part of the public transportation infrastructure. These are public vehicles for hire. Well, then, if this is all the case, then it's got to be, when drivers are attacked, it's got to be treated like a metro bus or a circulator bus operator or a public employee being attacked. And it's not. The media doesn't take it that way. And certainly police and other officials do not have the same level of respect for drivers, even though they constantly say they're part of the public transportation infrastructure, as others who are part of it.
That's correct. That's correct.
Tony Norman, last thoughts you have, and then what we're going to do is we're going to go out with an extended interview with John Liss, who's a co-founder of Tenants and Workers United. It's an excellent group that is working with drivers in Alexandria and Arlington. Again, drivers in Alexandria are going to be at the Alexandria City Council on Tuesday. They are facing a vote on credit card mandate, which drivers don't necessarily have a problem with. They're just concerned that they maintain their ability as independent operators to select their own vendors. They also have a serious problem in Alexandria of being able to leave the companies. There's 2 years they can't leave, and so companies really have leverage over them. That's another issue which will be discussed, although maybe not conclusively, coming up on Tuesday. But before we turn to that, your final thoughts, Tony Norman.
My final thoughts is what we've always been stating, that drivers need to raise their come and be more involved into these issues, and they need to raise the consciousness of the public, to raise the consciousness of the media, raise the consciousness of our elected leaders, and raise the consciousness of other drivers and cab companies. And I think in order to do that, they have to be engaged and involved, listening to programs like this, keeping programs like this on the air, and continuing to circulate their newsletters and things of that nature. And they do have to, they may not be able to make every council hearing, a taxicab hearing. I'm sure they would just come to the more important ones, but still keep up and keep involved. So when your leaders say you need to come to this particular hearing, it's important that we show numbers at the more important hearings.
But not every driver needs to be at every hearing.
That's right. Just your leaders will pick out the hearings that we really need to show the numbers in, but at least stay involved, stay informed. And then you have the taxicab telephone conference. So listen in and stay involved in that way.
Thank you, Tony Norman. As you mentioned, beginning at 8:30, just a little bit from now, for those who speak Amharic, the phone conference begins. And again, that's 712-432-3100. And the code is 140465. And Tony, you also mentioned it's important for shows like this to exist. And Tony and I volunteer, and we're glad to do so. And the SBA, the Small Business Association, pays for the airtime. And so it takes membership fees in order to make that happen, and a lot of other stuff that SBA is doing. So I encourage folks to consider becoming members of the Small Business Association, and also let drivers know this show and the past ones are archived at thefightback.org, so drivers can check out what's going on and they can get the information that they need to be informed about this industry. And there's a lot of big companies that are looking for ways to reach their hands into cabs and pull out ever more. And, you know, it's taking blood from a rock. Drivers are trying to make ends meet and do something for their families. And the only way that's going to be protected is with drivers coming together. Lastly, but I also want to say, you know, if this show sounds like it's, you know, very well produced, well, it is. I want to thank Will Martin, who's doing outstanding work. And I also want to thank Mark Taylor, who's an extraordinary engineer, for putting this all together. And so we're going to conclude here, but we're going to go out until the radio signal goes down. So we're just going to play an extended interview with John Liss. He's the co-founder of Tenants and Workers United, a grassroots group working with drivers in Alexandria and Arlington. I spoke with him last year, and I wanted to play this interview in full with John Liss. So we now turn to that interview.
In 1985 and 1986, the entire Arlandria neighborhood of about 10,000 people was given eviction notices. So a bunch of people from outside the neighborhood, including myself and others from within the neighborhood, came together to fight the planned mass eviction of 10,000 people, 5,000 families. And we fought and delayed the evictions, took over City Hall, marched, organized, mostly Latino, some African-American, some white. In the end, we had a core of maybe 50 leaders, and we incorporated as Tenants and Workers. Originally, Tenants and Workers Support Committee. Eventually, Tenants and Workers United became the current name. Coming out of that, we had formed this nucleus. We incorporated, and we became an organization that struggled for affordable housing. We saw that as the cutting-edge place where communities are destroyed, working-class people of color are pushed out of cities and urban areas, create the organization, democratically structure it, have a relatively autonomous structure in which different projects can sort of arise and be coordinated from a central body. And so along the way, we added different pieces of work. We added workers. So we had low-wage workers. We had housekeepers from local hotels who basically in Virginia, we had very few unions. So workers would come to us, particularly women workers, demanding better treatment in the hotel industry. So we had a hotel worker organizing project. We had day labor organizing projects. We had youth and parents coming together for projects to transform public education so it served communities of color. So we had all these different things sort of going on. Telescoping up to 2001, we're trying to figure out how to organize on a bigger regional scale. We're predominantly Latino at this point, some African-American, some white, and we want to figure out how do we start organizing other immigrants, particularly immigrants from Africa, immigrants from South Asia. And 9/11 happens and national airports shut down. We are not, nor we were ever a service agency. However, we had an opportunity to provide service or financial support to drivers and others who were tied to the airport, which was shut down for about 6 months. So we used that. We said, okay, we're going to do service for the first time in our lives. We're going to give money out to drivers for the first time. We want to use this as an organizing opportunity. So every time a driver came in to get mortgage or rental assistance, we had a conversation about the industry, about how, you know, what's the problem, why, you know, what are the issues there. We knew that drivers had been self-organizing off and on for a dozen years, and it became pretty clear pretty soon that the drivers were having a problem because they were attached to a monopoly like property. That basically Yellow Cab and Diamond, which is no longer in existence but was in existence in 2001, were a monopoly. They're one, effectively one company. They controlled about 60% of the Alexandria taxi market. They treated drivers as they saw fit. They charged pretty much as they could get away with. There was no democratic rights. I mean, the standard story was if they didn't like you, the dispatcher would come out of the office with a screwdriver and pop the dome light right off your roof of your car, and that ended your taxi driving career. And it cost you, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, depending how much money you had paid on the gray market to get access to driving a cab. So we did an analysis with the drivers. The drivers became part of Tenants and Workers United. The drivers received the assistance, actually, the emergency assistance post 9/11. Then a group of them came in and said they wanted to affiliate with our organization as a chapter. Predominantly Ethiopian, large number of Pakistani, South Asian folks all came together and said, we want to change the taxi laws. We want to work with Tenants and Workers United. We began a three-year campaign that, developed a sharp critique of the monopoly structure that tied drivers like property to these big companies, to this one big company, really. And then we developed an alternative law. We worked with Aurora Vasquez she was with the Advancement Project. And our analysis was that what we needed was to create a system of free agency that drivers could move, from the monopoly company to a new company, or that drivers could create a new company that would be a cooperative collectively owned by the drivers. It took us 4 years from first meeting the drivers in September 2011, thereabouts, until I believe it was June of 2005 to pass new legislation in Alexandria. And the drivers did dozens of delegations to city council members. We did large protest marches. We did literature drops, leaflets, met with community organizations, did all kinds of things to sort of build deep and broad support around breaking the monopoly. We were offered different partial solutions all along the way. They were going to give some of the drivers their own company, which is often what's offered, because they wanted us to get out of the way. And we were trying to break the monopoly and create a system of movement and free agency, and that drivers would have certain rights.
the city council passed a new ordinance, I believe it was in June of 2005, and then we quickly organized a cooperative in which each driver had one share, one vote, and they could collectively run their own company. A year later, the company opens. During the initial 2 years of movement, 200 and almost 40 drivers out of the 765 odd drivers that drive in Alexandria moved into the cooperative, and the cooperative has been functioning ever since. It hasn't had a huge dispatch volume, but it has functioned as a business. Honestly, there's been some issues trying to build sort of multinational unity between, I'd say primarily Pakistani and Ethiopian drivers. And I think at this point, it's taken 3 or 4 years, but drivers have worked through some of those differences. There's not an Ethiopian or Pakistani way to run a cooperative. It's basically running a business. Can you pay your bills? Can you work together democratically? I think they've gotten to that space where they're making that happen. So they have a company with currently 234 drivers in which they each own a share. They run the company. Their stand dues they save about $7,000 a year from the other, from yellow cab days in terms of stand dues. So they're saving close to $400 or $500 a month easily, probably $500 easily a month in stand dues. They're trying to build up their dispatch business, and they have committees that function. They have a board of directors that functions. They build in a much higher level of multinational unity and collaboration, cooperation. So I consider that fairly successful.
And that's Union Cab?
That's Union Cab. Yeah, Union Taxi Cab Cooperative, commonly called Union Cab, is the company they created. Most of the drivers work out of National Airport, though they do serve the city of Alexandria. A couple years after they created the company and this movement started, the city clamped back down using the excuse of companies weren't providing enough dispatch service. They said, we're not going to let drivers move to companies that don't have two dispatch calls per day per driver. Which really, Yellow Cab was the only company that had that. And even there, it was questionable how legitimate those calls were. It was a way to sort of reimpose their sense of monopoly control over the industry. And so that happened. And the good thing is it kept them from shutting down Union Cab for not providing enough dispatch. The bad thing was, the way I would compare it to a jailbreak, 250 or so drivers escaped during the period when the law was fully in effect. Now they're sort of locked in with about 500 drivers still stuck in some kind of imprisoned type state where they are attached to the company and really can't move. Interestingly, a year or so after that goes through, we're approached at Tenants and Workers United is approached by yellow cab drivers, the remaining 295 yellow cab drivers, which again is probably just under 50% of the industry, say we can't move. And because we can't move, we are getting stuck with huge stand dues. They just did an increase on the stand dues. They fire us at will. They treat us terribly. We're denied basic human rights. We start to reopen the conversation over the last 6 months with the city. We want to restore movement. One new fact came to light in the last month that's really interesting and might open this up and move towards a quick and happy ending is that it used to be a lot of the drivers in Alexandria had a city license or a hack license to drive in the city, and many had national airport licenses to pick up at the airport. And the airport is pretty lucrative. It's less trips, but they're longer trips. You can make some decent, better money at the airport. However, it seems like the airport is not issuing unlimited numbers of licenses at this point. So effectively, if you drive in the city and you don't have an airport license, your temptation to move to a company that doesn't have dispatch is going to be governed by sort of measuring the stand dues that it costs versus the service that's provided by the company. Well, that's reasonable. That's market conditions. You might choose to stay with Yellow Cab if you're treated at least with dignity and respect and your stand dues stop rising up. Or you might move to another company that charges much less, has less dispatch, but treats you right, and you're going to work the hotels, or you're going to work flags, or whatever. You're going to work personal requests. In any case, you're going to be serving the city, which is the city's sort of public, the city, the government's public function is they want to make sure that their residents, their citizens are picked up. Fair enough. So we just discovered this fact in the last couple weeks, had a couple meetings with city council members, and we're going to try and push through something which says if you don't have an airport license, you should be allowed to move because you are almost by definition going to be serving the city with all your business if you're not at the airport. So we're hoping we can move that to some level of free agency again and movement, which would again break the monopoly and give drivers at least equality with the companies in terms of their treatment, in terms of sort of having full human and economic rights. you want me to roll into Arlington too? Yeah. I'm on a long rift here, but Arlington is very similar. Again, most of these companies were, these laws were set up over the last 25 or 30 years as a either white or African-American industry became increasingly immigrant. And Arlington, too, has set up a system which basically protects the monopoly. In Arlington, it's Red Top is the big company, and Arlington Yellow, same owner. They are the big monopoly, and essentially you can't move. You're attached to these companies. So, of course, you're denied your human rights. You can't move from one company to the other. You can be charged whatever the market will bear in terms of stand dues. You can be treated disrespected regularly, et cetera, et cetera. All those, the same things that we talked about in Alexandria with the problem of monopoly and not having movement is the same thing that happens in Arlington. So the drivers in Arlington have been meeting with Tenants and Workers United for 2.5 years. We won some minor victories along the way. We've had mobilizations of up to a couple hundred people. We did a sit-in at one bureaucrat's office when the director of transportation would not meet with us. At this point, we've collectively created a 47-page rewrite of the taxi code, which creates, again, free movement and the ability for drivers to create a new company. The drivers are currently doing their round of conversations with the 5 county board members in Arlington with the hope of changing this law before the end of the year.
How's that looking?
It's going to be a tough fight there. And I feel like we've got one or two county board members who are very strong and get it. We've got another number of others who are concerned about losing quality, what's perceived of as quality dispatch by Red Top. Our contention would be, you can't hold drivers bondage to provide dispatch for anybody. That drivers, also in Arlington, very few of them have airport licenses. So by definition, if they have Arlington hack license, they're driving an Arlington cab, they're going to serve Arlington. It shouldn't be the county's business to force them to be affiliated with Red Top.
As you work with drivers, John List, I don't know if you've had this experience, but seeing this in D.C. as well as in Prince George's County, the various variations of taxi cab commissions and they are required to have a certain level of driver representation, but I've yet to see drivers feel that they've been meeting those requirements.
In both Arlington and Alexandria, DC has a taxi cab commission. In Arlington and Alexandria, it's a transportation commission that controls this stuff. It's a fairly informal board and has a range of responsibility, like parking regulations, special parking permits, where do you put speed bumps, all this stuff. So it's a slightly different problem. A, you don't have driver representation. So yes, that's a real problem because that's part of the thing. Secondly, taxis is just a small sliver of their sort of agenda, so they really don't give a rat's ass. So they really don't look at what's going on there. They don't really understand it, and whatever staff says, the commission tends to go for it. The ultimate decision in Arlington and Alexandria is by the city, the county board, or the city council, respectively. So that's where it ultimately has to go. The transportation commission is much more an advisory role, is the way we look at it. So it's a problem in the sense that you don't have driver representation. But it's not quite the same as, I wouldn't make it comparable to D.C.
And as you work with drivers to approach legislators in Alexandria and in Arlington, how are drivers received by elected officials?
I think it's changed over time. So interestingly, for example, in Arlington this past year, there was a Democratic primary. About 100 drivers showed up in a relatively low turnout primary wearing stickers that said, I'm a taxi driver and I vote. It didn't even matter who they voted for, but the whole idea, our political project, is how do you show driver leadership, driver organization, and driver, how do you make what's invisible visible? So basically, when elected officials see cab drivers, they're invisible. They're men of color, they're immigrant men of color, they're working class immigrant men of color, and they're seen as invisible. So a lot of our organizing is for them to assert their humanity and assert their ability to provide leadership for the industry. And so I feel like we've surfaced that in both jurisdictions, there's an awareness now that drivers are organized as a collective entity. Is it as strong as it needs to be? No, because we've still got these bad laws. But is it moving forward? Yeah, I'd say the drivers, through their self-initiative, really have sort of gotten on the political map.
And I guess part of that entering the political process is part of your work with Virginia New Majority?
Sure. At Virginia New Majority, we link voter organizing as sort of an organic part of a struggle for social justice. So that means participating in local elections, whether that's endorsing candidates, whether that's at least interviewing candidates and getting their position, holding candidate forums, getting people out to the polls, actually having taxi drivers and their families and their friends and their neighbors get out and vote. Because, again, we're trying to move what is, in a sort of racist way, is considered invisible and not existent into what is powerful and obviously inexistent and no longer invisible, but highly visible. So the electoral work is part of that process.
How long has Virginia new majority been in existence?
We're entering or finishing our fifth year. We started in late 2007, so we're in 2012. We do statewide work. We see building power in Virginia is a matter of organizing in Tidewater, Richmond, and Northern Virginia, pulling together sort of predominantly African-American peoples in Richmond and Tidewater with a sort of multinational, multiracial Northern Virginia, that actually you have a numerical majority. Occasionally you have an electoral majority, meaning people voted together, like for example, to elect Barack Obama. But we want to make it a political majority in the sense that people have a shared common understanding of history, a shared common understanding or common sense of how this world can be reorganized so that it's fair for working people, people of color, women.
You talk about Tuesday's election with the Alexandria City Council. You had a couple of strong progressive candidates that came very close to securing seats. Did not win, but came close.
Yeah, there was 14 candidates in Alexandria. Virginia New Majority actually endorsed four, of which one won. Two of the more progressive ones, Sammy Motionberg and Victoria Menhever, came in seventh and ninth out of 14 candidates. The top six got in. Victoria lost by 200 votes. Didn't get in, which we had some taxi driver mobilization around this. We were missing it. We need 200 more votes, which I know were out there, and we could have really flipped that city council. What I would say is there's a range of issues around development, displacement of working class communities of color from the west end of Alexandria, workers' rights, including taxi driver rights, that are essentially ignored by the dominant sector, the chamber of commerce sector of the Democratic Party. We had somewhat of an insurgency trying to stem those sort of development forces and preserve neighborhoods and community and make it more people-oriented or people-centered in terms of future development while respecting working people's rights. Came this close, you know, missed it by a couple inches. I think the question will be, can we turn what was voting power into actually organizing power? Can we go from 4,000 people who supported progressive candidates in an election to a couple thousand people that are actually organized and putting pressure on the county city government? Because I think if you do that, you actually come out ahead.
Going forward, what do taxi drivers need to do to make the gains that are needed over the next couple years?
So I would say it's organizing themselves as working people and small business people, really, if you want to say, as taxi driver owners. I think it's actually, how do you take this back to the community and organize, you know, the soccer teams that many of the men play with, families, churches, mosques, all the different ways that people are sort of self-organized. How do you sort of engage that in the and use that as leverage in the political process? There's a really sleeping giant in terms of the large numbers of both African and South Asian people living in Northern Virginia. And if there was some higher level organization around racial and class and gender issue interests, I think you could actually have a powerful block that could, again, shift politics in Northern Virginia.
Thanks for your time, John List. Any final thoughts you care to share?
No, I mean, the other thing I would just add, because I know this is with DC taxi drivers, it seems to me that there's probably 10 to 15,000, mostly men of color, making their living as taxi drivers throughout the region. And if they ever got together and put aside some differences, and it'd be a pretty powerful block. If you had all 15,000 driving real slow around the city, observing the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, I think you'd shut down Washington. So my point is, there's real potential power there. Trying to figure out how to get all these different jurisdictions and taxi drivers to come together is not easy, but I think it's an important project.